In the morning, Gitmo Nation, and thank you for joining me once again for Just Getting By with Sir Craig and Chemslave. Hello, Chemslave.
Good morning, Craig.
How are you doing this fine and beautiful Monday day?
Well, dry.
Yes. Thankfully, you're dry, I'm dry, and the central Susquehanna region of Pennsylvania, where we both reside, is getting drier. Because for those of you that are not aware, Pennsylvania, eastern Pennsylvania, has been just inundated with floods. And it's been really bad for some of the areas. My college, for instance, will be out for a week and a half because of the flood.
Ouch.
Yeah. Last Wednesday was the first day we had off. And we won't be back until next Monday.
That sucks.
Yes, it does, actually. And it's not because of flooding. It's because of a lack of water. Because of the rest of the town got flooded, but my college is on a hill. It's not really important for the show. But, yeah, it's you know, houses have been washed away. Roads have been washed out, upended. It's just been terrible. But you know, that's what happens, and you gotta move on. And but yeah, we're drying out. It's a beautiful day out, actually. It's quite nice. So hopefully it stays that way.
Yes, I had the opportunity not to go to work Thursday or Friday.
Awesome. That is fantastic.
And according to what I read from our management directives, I get paid for those two days too. Sweet.
Excellent. Excellent. Getting paid for doing nothing. That's the American dream, isn't it?
Well, not really.
Well, it is if you're President Obama. You see, President Obama has had a busy week. Most recently, yesterday, he had some ceremonies to go to with former President Bush at 9/11, the 9/11 memorial. They opened it and did like a combination kind of groundbreaking and commencement ceremony for the 9/11 memorial. But also he did a speech to a joint session of Congress last Thursday that was. And this is that same speech that caused so much controversy a few weeks ago with Obama trying to dictate to John Boehner when he was going to do it, and he was going to try to upstage a Republican debate that was held the day before. So this is that same speech, and it was highly anticipated. People thought that this would be a feisty speech, a speech where Obama went after the Republicans and laid out a clear message about where he wanted to go. Turns out some of that was right. This was a highly partisan, this was a highly partisan speech. It was a speech that he did a lot of attacking and a lot of insinuations. But it was very light on ideas. Now, Chemslave, why do you think the speech was light on ideas?
Because he doesn't have any.
Bingo. More specifically, he doesn't even have a plan yet. He came before this joint session of Congress with these basic proposals, these broad suggestions. And we won't even get into those here. This isn't a financial podcast or anything. I'm sure Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz are going to talk about this on Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged. But for our purposes, we're going to focus more on the politics of it. But he had some just very generalized suggestions that, you know, it's more of the same. Same deficit spending, same stimulus. This is all stimulus, and he didn't want to use that word. It didn't show up once in his speech, but this is all stimulus. It totals into about $400 billion of stimulus. But more interestingly, is the political angle of this. Now, I've got several clips which we will play, and once they're done, we will be analyzing them. I have one really short clip, which I think sums up just how original this speech was. I mean, it just knocks your socks off just how original this man is. Every word out of his mouth was a totally unique thing. Just take a listen.
I am sending this Congress a plan that you should pass right away. You should pass this jobs plan right away. Pass this jobs bill. Pass this jobs bill. Pass this jobs bill. You should pass it right away. Pass this jobs bill. You should pass it right away. Pass this jobs bill. Pass this bill. Pass this jobs bill. Pass this bill. Pass this jobs bill. You should pass it again. Right away. Pass this jobs bill. You should pass this bill right away. You should pass it.
So, you can hear just how original this man was. He,
you must pass this bill.
What was that?
You must pass this bill.
That's right. And, pass this bill. Pass this bill. Pass this bill. Pass the bill. Pass this bill. You must pass this bill. Pass it now. You know,
I think I talked in my sleep and start saying pass bill, pass the bill.
Exactly. You know, it is almost scary how arrogant this man is. Now, you have to keep in mind, and I'm going to keep this brief because we have some other clips that I don't want to take too much time, but you've got to keep in mind the frame of government that we have. We have three co-equal branches of government, and Obama at first tried to muscle his way into the House floor and lecture the Congress at a time of his own choosing. And that's just not how it's done. He needed to work this stuff out with congressional leadership. So that was one disrespect to the supposedly co-equal legislative branch. But this whole speech was a lecture about what Congress must do. He wasn't saying, it is my recommendation that you pass this bill. I would advise you to pass this bill. I would sincerely hope that you consider passing this bill. No, he was saying, pass this bill. Pass this bill. You must pass this bill. Now, I get the rhetorical reason why he did that. To make himself sound animated. To make this seem like it was an important thing to do. But it's just so arrogant of the man to think that he has any right whatsoever to lecture the Congress in this imperious way. If George W. Bush stood up there on that rostrum and lectured the Congress that way, you must do this. You must do that. He would have been excoriated, and rightfully so. He never did that. Very few presidents approach their jobs with such a high-handed level of hubris as Barack Obama does, and it is that is unfortunate. It really is. But do you have anything to add about this, Kim Slade, before we move on to another clip?
Truthfully, I'm waiting for one of the other clips to start laying into it, but I listened to the speech twice. First time I just watched a regular vanilla speech, and then while going onto the White House website, I signed up for to get updates from the White House.
Oh, okay, yay!
They sent me an email saying, "Hey, we have an enhanced speech which has like graphs, nice little like graphs on it and stuff." So, truthfully, I wanted to, bash my head against the wall after listening to that a second time.
Oh, I so get you. But, okay, so this is another clip that he talks about something that John and Adam on No Agenda, noagendashow.com, have picked up on, and it is Barack Obama's conception of the American dream. So just give this a listen. If you will.
We continue to face an economic crisis that has left millions of our neighbors jobless, and a political crisis that's made things worse. This past week, reporters have been asking, what will this speech mean for the president? What will it mean for Congress? How will it affect their polls in the next election? But the millions of Americans who are watching right now, they don't care about politics. They have real life concerns. They need to spend months looking for work. Others are doing their best just to scrape by, giving up nights out with the family to save on gas or make the mortgage, postponing retirement to send a kid to college. These men and women grew up with faith in an America where hard work and responsibility paid off. They believed in a country where everyone gets a fair shake and does their fair share, where if you stepped up, did your job, and were loyal to your company, that loyalty would be rewarded with a decent salary and good benefits, maybe a raise once in a while. If you did the right thing, you could make it. Anybody could make it in America.
All right. So there you have Barack Obama's conception of the American dream.
So should we change our show title to Just Scraping By?
that's a good idea. If once we go into the 2.0 stage of the show, we might consider it. who knows? So no, for those of you that might not have picked up on that, his conception of the American dream isn't to reach as high up in society as you can to make as much money as possible and to be as good as you can be in your specific field. His idea of the American dream is, you know, getting a normal job, maybe getting some raises every now and then, and, you know, just existing. That's his American dream, to exist.
Well, I'm going to be living that for a few more years.
Oh, yeah, so will I. Yeah, so will I. I will be living Barack Obama's American dream, absolutely. Same with you. You know, it's scary. This is scary. And, you know, I think it was Dvorak that mentioned this, that none of the Republicans seem to want to jump on him about this. This is such a no-brainer issue that, you know, any American who has any detachment or any sense of reality will know that they want to get ahead in life. They want to, you know, be an executive at their company, or they want to be making triple-digit thousands of dollars or millions if they can. You know, they want to have a nice home. They want to have nice cars. Because it's not just because people are selfish and they want material possessions just to have them. That's not the point. The point is that you are surrounded by the fruits of your labor, and that if you work really hard, you have the chance to, quite frankly, have the same kind of lifestyle as Barack Obama has. This is not a man who is just getting by. This is a man who is living an American dream that is in stark contrast to the vision for America that he enunciated both in that speech last week and in his other, you know, appearances when he's talked about this issue. It's the
American Dream 1.0. You have to get in with the times, Craig. American Dream 2.0 is to just scrape by.
Exactly. Yep. But then, you know, if you are connected enough, if you are elitist enough, then you can kind of buy a pass to get back into the 1.0 American Dream, just for like a brief time, for you and your family. But everybody else, go, you know, fuck them. They have to go to 2.0, just scraping by American Dream. So, you know, that's unfortunate. That's scary, to be honest with you.
You know why they don't touch upon that very issue, Craig.
Why is that?
Because both Democrats and Republicans work for the exact same people. The lobbyists.
Well, unfortunately, you know, that is pretty true. But I think just because of the ideological differences between the two parties, if one is said to be better than the other in this respect, I think it would be at least the conservative Republicans out there. Not as numerous as people think. A true conservative is relatively hard to come by in Washington. But, you know, that's just my point of view. But we have a slightly longer clip that is really the meat and potatoes political stuff. And this is Obama just saying about how terrible the Republicans are and how they have no idea how to care for and maintain this country. So take a listen to this. This is important.
I know that some of you have sworn oaths to never raise any taxes on anyone for as long as you live. Now is not the time to carve out an exception and raise middle-class taxes, which is why you should pass this bill right away. I'm also well aware that there are many Republicans who don't believe we should raise taxes on those who are most fortunate and can best afford it. But here's what every American knows. While most people in this country struggle to make ends meet, a few of the most affluent citizens and most profitable corporations enjoy tax breaks and loopholes that nobody else gets. That's how America can be number one again. And that's how America will be number one again. Now, I realize that some of you have a different theory on how to grow the economy. Some of you sincerely believe that the only solution to our economic challenges is to simply cut most government spending and eliminate most government regulations. Well, I agree that we can't afford wasteful spending, and I'll work with you, with Congress, to root it out. And I agree that there are some rules and regulations that do put an unnecessary burden on businesses at a time when they can least afford it. That's why I ordered a review of all government regulations. So far, we've identified over 500 reforms, which will save billions of dollars over the next few years. We should have no more regulation than the health, safety, and security of the American people require. Every rule should meet that common sense test. But what we can't do, what I will not do, is let this economic crisis be used as an excuse to wipe out the basic protections that Americans have counted on for decades. I reject the idea that we need to ask people to choose between their jobs and their safety. I reject the argument that says for the economy to grow, we have to roll back protections that ban hidden fees by credit card companies, or rules that keep our kids from being exposed to mercury, or laws that prevent the health insurance industry from shortchanging patients. I reject the idea that we have to strip away collective bargaining rights to compete in a global economy. We shouldn't be in a race to the bottom where we try to offer the cheapest labor and the worst pollution standards. America should be in a race to the top. And I believe we can win that race. In fact, this larger notion that the only thing we can do to restore prosperity is just dismantle government, refund everybody's money, and let everyone write their own rules and tell everyone they're on their own, that's not who we are. It's not the story of America. Yes, we are rugged individualists. Yes, we are strong and self-reliant. And it has been the drive and initiative of our workers and entrepreneurs that has made this economy the engine and the envy of the world. But there's always been another thread running throughout our history, a belief that we're all connected and that there's some things we can only do together as a nation. We all remember Abraham Lincoln as the leader who saved our union, founder of the Republican Party. But in the middle of a civil war, he was also a leader who looked to the future, a Republican president who mobilized government to build the Transcontinental Railroad, launch the National Academy of Sciences, set up the first land-grant colleges. And leaders of both parties have followed the example he set. Ask yourselves, where would we be right now if the people who sat here before us decided not to build our highways, not to build our bridges, our dams, our airports? What would this country be like if we had chosen not to spend money on public high schools, or research universities, or community colleges. Millions of returning heroes, including my grandfather, had the opportunity to go to school because of the GI Bill. Where would we be if they hadn't had that chance? How many jobs would it have cost us if past Congress has decided not to support the basic research that led to the internet and the computer chip? What kind of country would this be if this chamber had voted down Social Security or Medicare just because it violated some rigid idea about what government could or could not do? How many Americans would have suffered as a result? And maybe some of you have decided that those differences are so great that we can only resolve them at the ballot box.
All right. So I know that was a pretty long clip. Forgive me. I'll try not to go too terribly long on this. But, you know, Chemslave, can I ask you a question?
Ask away. I don't know if I'll have an answer that you'll like, but you never know.
Since when has America not been number one?
Well, it depends on how you look at it. Because if you look at the UN, like, how they have, like, different indices, America, in some instances, is not number one.
Yeah, well, you know what? The UN is a bullshit piece of crap anti-American terrorist organization that wants one world government, and they just want to, you know, screw everybody. I mean, it's, the UN is terrible, but I know what you're referring to, like the HDI, the Human Development Index. The United States is always like fourth or fifth on that, and there was just a story released last week about how America has fallen to fifth in global economic competitiveness.
There's also one that talks about how America, the broadband, like, availability.
Well, that really is shit. No, that is bad. That is
even Poland is above the United States. For many Americans, should be disconcerting.
Yeah, it is embarrassing. Not so much that it's Poland, but because America should be number one in internet access, and it's not. And there are geographic reasons for it. You know, people don't realize how big the United States is. Even Americans have no conception of how big the United States is. It is a continent in size. It is absolutely humongous with very different terrain in various areas. It's not surprising that we have problems with infrastructure in that regard, but it's still something that needs to be overcome. But that is a totally different issue. We're kind of getting away from what I wanted to talk about. Obama said that we can be number one again. We can be number one again. We should be number one again. He doesn't explain how, though. I mean, he doesn't explain how we're not number one. And he's talking about the economy. Now, Chemslave, correct me if I'm wrong, but the American economy is three times the size of the number two economy in the world, which is China. I'm right, right?
I don't have the numbers in front of me, but trust I'll nod my head and say yes.
Trust me, I am. America is roughly about three times the size of China. Actually, that's actually very low. It's more like 10 times the size. It's astounding how big America's economy is. It's that China is growing so rapidly. That's the reason why people are concerned that China will overtake the United States. But anyway, America is the number one economy. There's no question about it. And we're the number one military. We're the number one economy. We are still a superpower in a world just totally bereft of anyone else even remotely capable of standing up to us. Now, people see that changing in the future. Now, I'm not going to get into that today. But as of right now, America is number one in every meaningful, real term, you know, realistic point of view. And yet he said repeatedly towards the beginning of that clip that America is not number one. What does that tell you about his thought process?
That he sees America as below what most Americans see it as.
I think that's absolutely right. And I these are kind of leading questions, so please tell me if you disagree. That's why we have two people on the show. But, you know, it just sounded so much like Obama didn't even consider America to be the leader anymore.
That well, number one is slightly subjective.
I don't think it is.
Because depending on how you look at how you live your life, your opportunities and such, sometimes maybe the country you moved from or are planning to move to or something might be number one for whatever reason you see the reason to move there. Or...
I absolutely agree with you, but we're not talking about number one on an individual basis, and he wasn't. He was clearly talking about America in the abstract, in the whole, in a macro level, not a micro level. So that's why I'm concerned. I think he has a legitimately deep-seated distrust of America as it is right now. And his vision for America is fundamentally transformative and fundamentally different from what it is today. And America as it existed in 2008 when he was elected, and as it exists now in 2011 when he is on the ropes politically, I think he views as a negative entity. One that must be changed, one that must be bended to his bent, to his will, and to his vision for the future. And it that really concerned me. But then he, and please interrupt me with these things, because I have a little checklist that I want to go through quite quickly so we can get this show over with. He then goes on to say that every American knows that corporations are getting these huge tax breaks, and they're not paying anything like what, you know, real people have to pay, you know, comparatively speaking. And, Chemslave, do you know why that is rich coming from him? I can't believe he...
Probably. Also has a lot of tax breaks that he's making use of.
Well, no, not him personally, but I can't believe he had the balls to say this. You know about GE, General Electric?
Yes.
One of the biggest companies in the world, one of the richest companies in the world. It's an American company. Currently, the chairman and CEO of GE is a man named Jeffrey Immelt. Jeffrey Immelt is very, very close to the Obama administration. As a matter of fact, heading up his jobs council or some stupid shit like that. He has always been a big donor to Obama. And as a matter of fact, Jeffrey Immelt was in the visitor's box at this speech. Now, why do I bring up Jeffrey Immelt and GE? Well...
Didn't they not pay any taxes last...
That is absolutely right. Because of existing tax loopholes, GE didn't pay any taxes whatsoever last year. Now, isn't that just amazing to you? That is by far the highest profile company to have been able to pay absolutely no taxes last year. Income tax, corporate income tax. GE did pay taxes, but not in the aggregate, not in the big sense that other companies need to. This is a company that had many billions of dollars in profit. But because of their close association with the Obama administration, they were able to make use of a tax code that had been made specifically for them.
But didn't Obama say that they identified over 500 reforms that will save billions of dollars over the next few years?
And you'll notice that he didn't say what they were. He gave no timetable as to when he would present the Congress with a list of those loopholes to be closed. He didn't do any of that. And he's never going to. That was purely to make himself sound good for the public. And the Republicans were laughing at him I might have cut it out, but you might be able to hear the after when he said that. And almost the entire Republican caucus started laughing when he said that, because they knew that this man is full of shit. There's Jeffrey Immelt sitting in the visitors gallery just a few seats away from Michelle Obama, and Obama's talking about corporations getting tax breaks. I mean, it's just amazing. It's just absolutely amazing. But this isn't even what got me the most annoyed. And again, I'm running long on this, and I do want to get this taken care of, but it's just, this is such a frustrating speech. But towards the end of this clip, this last clip, this long clip, he starts talking about small government and how basically only crazy people believe in it. He says that Americans know, again, he's telling Americans what they know, that you can't cut spending and just cut regulation and magically the economy would, you know, get better. But in his saying that, what he was really saying is he doesn't want to cut spending, and he doesn't want to cut regulation. He sees regulation as a way to control businesses, and he views these businesses as things that need to be controlled. He goes on to mention several things, and I know you wanted to talk about some of these things, but he mentions some issues that government regulates that on the surface sound like they're good things. For instance, not allowing credit card companies to gouge customers with high interest rates and hidden fees. Also, let's talk about that, because I know that's something that you want to talk about. So let's focus on that for a second. You said you approved of Obama saying that. Why?
Yes. Truthfully, because I have a Citizens Bank credit card.
All right.
And I got a phone call from them saying, oh, yeah, we have this payment protection plan. And I was like, yeah, I don't want this. I was like, well, you need this plan. You can't not say no. So they more or less foisted it on me. So I had to wait until they gave me the frickin' paper and call them. So I'm actually making some type of regulation where they just can't foist a fee onto you where you can't say no to them unless you call back after you've already paid it at least once.
Well, you know, actually, I don't know the specifics of your situation. I didn't know you were going to be going that specific. But I'm willing to bet, no offense or anything, but I am really willing to bet that there would have been a way for you to get out of that, even before you paid. I don't care what they told you. That doesn't sound like that's legal, to be honest with you.
And I actually was able to cancel it before I had to pay, but the way the woman... sold it to me that this is one of those things that you don't really want to back out of. And then when I called them, they were like selling me like different fees.
Oh yeah,
like,
okay.
Oh yeah, you can go back to this fee now. It's like, no, I don't want fees at all.
Yeah, no, these companies are terrible. I'm not going to say that they're not. And as a matter of fact, controls on credit card companies have been in place for years now, instituted by a Republican president and a Republican Congress under George Bush, and they've been expanded upon slightly over the past 3 years with President Obama. But these are not ideas that conservatives necessarily want to get rid of, because he also talked about not only the credit card issue, which conservatives supported. They supported protecting consumers from credit card companies because it's clear that they were not acting in the best interests of the people and the country at large. But he also mentioned, Obama mentioned in this speech, about keeping mercury out of the hands of kids, you know, and like thermometers and things like that. This is going back to regulation, how you can't put things in products. Lead paint, mercury thermometers, you know, things like that.
Another thing I support.
And another thing that conservatives support, too. I originally wasn't going to play all of that 4.5-minute clip. But this is why I did. Because people listen to Obama say that, and they automatically say, yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. I agree with President Obama. Which means that since he is obviously attacking the Republicans, I must not agree with the Republicans. But he framed the last half of his speech, what I have condensed down into about 4.5 minutes, he framed this all as Republicans don't want anything at all. They're basically anarchists. They don't want any regulation. They don't want any consumer protection. They don't want any welfare programs. They don't want anything at all. And it's just not true. Republicans don't want kids to be swallowing mercury. They don't want kids to be eating lead paint chips. They don't want people being gouged with credit cards. They don't want any of this. And they support limited regulations and limited standards to keep people safe. They do. This is not an issue that liberals have a monopoly on. It's just that Republicans have a level they are unwilling to cross, at least conservatives. Now, you have liberal Republicans that will do whatever they need to stay in office. Well, they all do that. But a true conservative will have a limit where he or she says, you know, I can't do this anymore. This is just too much. Too much regulation. And, you know, it is so disingenuous of President Obama. He then goes on to describe Abraham Lincoln, who, and they talked about this on No Agenda, by the way, but he erroneously said that Abraham Lincoln was the founder of the Republican Party. I didn't find that too controversial, just to go off on a little side tangent. I didn't find that controversial because the Republican Party had only been around since 1856, and Lincoln was elected only 4 years after the party formed. He was the first national candidate for the Republicans, like the first really, you know, prominent one that had any chance at all of winning. And he did found it in a real sense. So I don't resent Obama saying that, but I do resent the characterization that Abraham Lincoln, in a period where there was almost no interaction with the government except for the post office, that he can prop Lincoln up as some grand government, like, you know, program builder. He talked about the Transcontinental Railroad that Lincoln set up. He talked about a college system and other
National Academy of Sciences.
That's right, exactly. And all of that was good. But all of that did not exist at all in the past, and those were small steps towards a more central government, but a healthier nation as well. And modern conservatives would not argue that that was a bad thing. They wouldn't. And yet he was acting like they would.
I'm trying to read the in between the lines.
Yeah.
Well, the rules that keep out kids from being exposed to mercury.
Yeah.
Well, the people who regulate that are the EPA.
That's right.
The National Academy of Sciences, well, the Republican Party is majority, or maybe not majority, but at least normally are against global warming.
That's right.
So they're against, quote-unquote, science.
Yep. Because we know, if you don't believe in global warming, you're a kook, and you're anti-science, and you're an idiot.
Yes.
So that you see, that I think you stumbled onto something that's quite, quite interesting, and I see why he chose to highlight that, because he could have chosen to highlight other issues from Abraham Lincoln's administration, kind of like suspending the writ of habeas corpus, and not freeing any slaves whatsoever. But he didn't do that. Nope, didn't do that. By the way, I'm not criticizing Abraham Lincoln. I think he was truly the greatest president in the United States' history. But I'm just saying there were aspects of his presidency that liberals might have an issue with. And he didn't mention those. He only mentions the positive aspects. And he chose to mention that science, the National Academy of the Sciences, or whatever the hell that was. So I think you have a good point. Yeah, definitely have a good point. But he goes on to talk about, he says condescendingly, this whole thing was condescending. The whole speech was condescending towards Republicans. But he said that some people think that it's best to shut down government programs and hand the money back to the people. First of all, many of the programs that we have, yes, that would be the best thing to do. Can you seriously tell me that we don't have any programs, we don't have any departments that don't deserve to be around? Why the hell, and I know Dvorak's talked a lot about this, and I totally agree with him, why the hell do we have a Department of Education? Why the hell do we have a Department of the Interior, I guess? We have something like 15 or 16 cabinet-level independent departments, and it's just outrageous, and so many programs and specializations in each one of those. It's the bureaucracy in Washington is gargantuan, and quite frankly, there is a sizable amount of government that could safely be cut away. But then we have big, big, big sections of government that quite frankly need to remain. And Republicans are not anarchists, but you would think that they were anarchists if you listened very closely to Obama's speech. So, you know, I just wanted to address that. I wanted to address that long clip in that regard, because conservatives, at least the true ones that are not total douchebags, are not the whack jobs that he makes them sound. They're not. It's just like Ron Paul. People try to ask Ron Paul, well, are you telling me that you would end this, or that you would end that? And it was always the assumption that it's such a terrible thing, and that he's so crazy. But he's not that far out of the mainstream either. This is just a concerted effort by liberals in this country to make conservatism and limited government sound radical, when in fact it is Obama and his brand of liberalism that is radical. What do you have to say?
Not much other than Ron Paul is probably one of the sanest people I've listened to from the conservative faction in a long time.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I love Ron Paul for domestic policy. I've said this many times on this podcast, I'll say it again, he's a little bit too isolationist for foreign policy for my liking, but still, I mean, he's got a good head on his shoulders, as they say, and people could really do well to listen to him. All right, so do you have anything that you want to talk about this week?
Well, this week, today.
Oh, today, I'm sorry, yes, today.
Oh, wow. You're allowing me a lot to talk about.
You can only talk about one thing this whole week.
Mine will be just a small little interlude.
All right.
Into adding to the same discussion, pretty much. Well, the CEO of Gibson, it's like to Obama said that they should show some concern for the nation's job creators. It's like direct quote, it's not easy to compete on a global basis. I'm guessing he's talking about his company and companies like his. We're competing with Chinese, European companies. We'd like to feel like we're respected and help create jobs. Now, what he's referring to is, like, last week, I believe, I talked about how the federal government sent in a SWAT team to check on the wood that they're using, because according to our federal government, he might be breaking some Indian law, which, of course, would be very important to our federal government, because so many of the people that work there are Indian in they're Indian that they either moved here or their families moved here from India. So, seems to be some type of problem with that.
All right.
Did I go Yoda again?
A little bit, but that's okay. Now, but we should remind the audience